so serious.
All the toys, all the time.
I am the game, and still getting trying to play you.
You know the rules. This isn't a toy.
But we bought it at the toy store.
We did, but the way I'm using it makes it an adult thing.
Are you ready to play the game? Yeah!
Welcome to the Toy Department with Matt Kolsky and Derek Madden.
Yeah.
All right, we're diving in. It's Derek Madden. He's Matt Kolsky.
Cannonball.
I think we're both a little trepidatious about this week's Toy Department. Just because, man, all of a sudden it's like TV season is here. There's a lot of stuff happening.
By the way, I'm having this thought while we're talking right now, so we haven't discussed in the pre-production meeting, but couldn't they just wait till after the World Series or something? Like, you know, then we'd be more than halfway through the NFL season. We'd, like, have steadied the ship from the start of NBA season a little bit. I would be ready to watch, like, 10 hours of season premieres in, like, 3 weeks. Well, is that too much to ask?
Historically, Fox has done that. You know, that's sort of actually, you know, they always, it's in recent years been a handicap for them in terms of launching new shows, right? Mm. They have the World Series that kind of interrupts everything for 2 weeks, so they really don't start a lot of stuff until that's over, by which point, like, other networks have developed hits.
Right.
Nowadays, the idea of any network developing any hits, right? Like,
it seems crazy, and also it seems like if it's good, it'll pop when it comes out.
Is there a new network show that you hear about people watching?
I mean, we watched a couple to, like, taste them, but not really. Nothing is getting – there's no This Is Us this year, right?
I mean, no, and I think This Is Us was not This Is Us, at least for – like, it wasn't like This Is Us was, like, out of the box, like, you know, boom, right? That was the thing people sort of caught on to. Like, maybe, like, Scandal was, like, the last thing where it, like, came up, or Empire.
Scandal and Empire both hit really big.
Like, right away.
That should tell developers something. But yeah, I don't know. Yeah.
It's pretty rare, right?
It's been a while.
Happens
now? It's been a long while.
You know, it seems like it takes a minute for some of these things to catch on. Are there any network shows?
Yeah, so what's the difference is my point. So give me my time, for God's sakes.
Yeah, that's fair. Are there any network shows you're
curious
about?
I had to go to a
wedding
in Santa Fe this weekend. You know, that takes time. It's too much. I haven't watched The Walking Dead yet. I'm not caught up on The Deuce, you know? I'm getting left in the dust here.
Yeah, and like, the streaming services are not... Like, Netflix, I feel like, is just dropping stuff on our head left and right.
Yeah. What, Stranger Things can't wait till February, for God's sakes? I don't know, man.
We'll watch Stranger Things. We'll talk about this next week. But, like, yeah. I gotta tell you,
though,
I haven't seen an episode yet, and I've already got the enough already. You know,
a little bit. More for me, it's just like, I really do think there should be more attention paid to this. I mean, I'm mostly kidding here, but joking aside. If I'm Netflix, I want to drop Stranger Things when there's less going on in the sports world and the TV premiere world. I think it makes more sense for them to drop shows like the ones we watched, actually. Mindhunters and American Vandal, where it's like, you know, new shows that we can sort of get into whenever we want.
I don't know, man. Stranger Things
is supposed to be an event.
Right, and but I think they're trying to hijack the scene, don't you think?
Yeah, but I think that's probably short-sighted or something. I don't know if that's the right word. It's probably, like, why bother? Why not own your own chunk of time at some later point?
What about Stranger Things isn't short-sighted?
That's fair.
All right, before I bury a show we haven't watched yet.
You liked the first season, did you not?
I did not. No, I did not like the first season.
Oh.
Yeah.
I don't remember our discussions, but I'm assuming you thought it was just like uninteresting nostalgia porn.
Yeah, like I thought it was just like I thought it was ultimate triumph of style over substance.
Uh-huh. I don't think that's an unfair criticism, but I do think it's a little like... what's the word? Curmudgeonly.
Yeah. And like I wasn't, I'm not really into parallel universe alien stories. It's not really my thing.
Not into 80s nostalgia? What happened?
In 80s nostalgia I sort of enjoy, but it's like I don't know, it's just sort of like it felt like that was the whole point. I don't know.
Wow.
Okay. I'd rather watch Angie DeParo.
I'm starting to feel like I have to work on you just to get you to watch this thing.
I mean, I'm going to watch it because this is the thing everybody's watching and talking about. But no, I'm not. I'm not excited about it at all. And I just want to say again, and I did say this last year, but I really want to say it again. Like, Winona Ryder's performance was so hammy. Oh, God. Like, just chomping scenery for 10 episodes.
How come some people are allowed to do that and others aren't? Because I didn't think it was bad. I thought she played to an overdramatic. I mean, like you said, style took a big place in the whole oeuvre, if you will. And I thought, like, her admittedly over-the-top performance was an aspect of that style that was not incongruous.
I see. I think what makes it work is when it's fun. You know, if it's John Travolta in the OJ series, you know, like... It's over the top, but it's fun. Like Winona Ryder, like shrieking, "Where is my boy?" And like chain smoking cigarettes for, you know, 7 episodes was the opposite of fun to me.
Yeah, I think you do. Naturally, you chose the worst aspects of the performance, but yeah, I hear what you're saying. I'm just not. I just didn't. I was not similarly put off.
Yeah. All right. Well, I was put off.
Well, maybe there'll be. I mean, here's the good news is. The decks are cleared, basically, as far as story goes. So, you know, maybe you find this year's story more engaging.
Yes, I suppose that's possible. And I really need to, like, probably, you know, open up my mind a bit. But like,
open your mind, young Derek.
Yeah, but, like, it doesn't help when I'm walking into Target, and this is a thing that really happened to me, and there's Stranger Things Monopoly and Stranger Things lunchboxes like staring at me.
Yeah, I will say even the TV ads are a little much for me.
Yeah, like all right, I get it. You're coming back. People are excited.
Right.
Okay. Let's delve into the Netflix shows that we have watched.
Yeah, and actually, I don't know. I'm interested to see your take, but I quite enjoyed myself with the homework.
Oh, you did? All right. We each watched three episodes of Mindhunter, right? And
If we're going to start with Mindhunter, can I ask you a question first?
All right, hit me.
Are you a fan of the movie Zodiac?
Yeah, I am. I'm in the bag for Fincher. Zodiac, okay. Is not, my favorite Fincher.
Because
some people revere that movie.
Yeah, and I would say this is a, like, spiritual, not sequel, but, like, spiritually, the Fincher I would most associate this with is Zodiac.
I see. I would say it splits the difference between Zodiac and Seven.
Okay, that's fair, too. Yeah. I didn't want to go that far back. But, yeah, it's got a little of the Seven-ish horror element to it.
Yeah, you've got sort of the charming serial killer.
And the sort of somewhat charming but also inexperienced and over his head young agent. I see that. But I'm thinking more tonally. And some of that is the time period.
Yeah. I think it's kind of, like visually, at least the pilot, which was one that Fincher did. Like, it doesn't have that constant rain like Seven. But it did have a lot of sort of those visual signatures, you know?
Yeah, that's true. The thing about Fincher with me is I also like him very much, but I think he's probably at his best with movies, in my eyes, with movies like Seven and Zodiac. Not because Fight Club isn't awesome; it is. I just mean. Something that stands out to me from Fincher is the sort of manufactured tension. It works in The Social Network, too, for that matter, where the tension of sort of small moments and less dramatic moments. I mean, in Seven, you have very dramatic moments, but in Zodiac, and I think that's the sort of touchstone I'm reaching for with Mindhunters is like a lot of the action's slow. A lot of the stuff that's in your face that right on the screen doesn't seem super high stakes, but there's this sort of broader tension created, I think, in large part by the filmmaking. And so just like from a tonal perspective, I find this show super engaging. And I also find the subject matter fascinating. So there are parts of this show that I think do not succeed. Maybe most notably the sort of, although I want it to work, the confusing girlfriend situation. And just like the main character who I can't decide it, but I think I like the performance, but he has this very like doe-eyed, blank-faced thing that he's doing. And I'm not sure how well it works with the rest of the tone of the show.
See, you know, when I first heard like, oh, the guy from Looking is the star of this, I was like, oh, I don't know about that. I actually think it works quite well. I think he does a great job. I sort of forget, like, I completely buy that relationship, even though the actor's pretty famously gay. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know. Like, I just think it all sort of, I don't know. Like, I thought the performance really kind of holds it together, and he's sort of perfect as this young, idealistic.
Well, that's where I was going to go.
Yeah.
I wasn't trying to criticize so much as just say it's a little weird early on. But the bigger point to me is the subject matter is absolutely fascinating, and the wide-eyed way they're going about it, it's a function of the time, right? These people are literally asking questions like, well, what if the motive is not something as simple? Like, they don't understand that serial killers really exist. And the questions they're asking surrounding crime and motive and like this subject matter is fascinating. And the nature
of evil. Yeah, I agree.
And to the point where I spent, 45 minutes last night looking up stuff that happened in the first few episodes to try to, place it in context a little bit. And I also think because you've got these tension and this sort of tension and quiet moments with this fascinating subject matter, even though there are some things that don't work 100% for me, I just I couldn't get enough of the show. Yeah. I was so fascinated by what was going on, and that sort of like wide-eyed, it's almost like a Socratic method thing, where even when he's teaching, he's sort of trying to figure out what the hell is going on. Speaking of the lead character, I think that's a great portal into a fascinating subject.
Yeah. I also think the show kind of dwells a little bit on this feeling of stability and institutions are collapsing around us, which I think is,
very relevant.
Yeah.
Very relevant. Very, very, very relevant.
What's happening now.
There were lines in each of the first three episodes, which I think is what we both watched, that just could have been plucked right out of that. I mean, obviously this is done on purpose, but applied 100% accurately to today as much as they did to the time when the show takes place.
Yeah. And I think the relationship, between the lead and his girlfriend is sort of an interesting way to explore that tension between authority and counterculture and all these things that were very prevalent in the time.
And when he's talking about you can just tell what a transitional time this is. And that's represented not only by the actual work they're doing in terms of learning about this new breed of criminal, but also, from music, there's points where he says things isn't the old, counterculture versus police thing getting a bit old, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you're like, this is transitioning from a world where this was non-concern. The FBI was just busting robbers and rapers, basically. And then all of a sudden they had to deal with fundamentally innocent, intelligent people questioning their authority and they don't totally understand what's happening. And the sort of wide-eyed main character, by being so open and interested and curious, serves as a great avatar for diving into the history of this stuff and seeing how minds were changing. In a way, he's America, right?
Yeah.
And he's more open-minded, certainly, than America tends to be. But he serves as an avatar for the country in terms of like, oh, this is a thing now.
Right. Well, and you don't really think a lot of the FBI, right? Sorry, go ahead.
I just wanted to say, because I thought of this over and over again through the first three episodes, the performance by the other, like his partner, who, you know what, let me look up his name right now because I want to give him credit.
Oh, I know exactly what you're talking about. It's
he is a
Bill Tench,
a sort of
the Holt
meathead type dude.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Holt McElhaney
He was in Fight Club, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah. I believe he was.
Yeah, he was in Fight Club.
Yeah.
This dude's a working actor. He's done a lot of stuff.
Yes, but this is the thing. Like, look at almost he does a lot of the same things. Like his oeuvre is military / police, and you know he's been on every Law and Order. He almost, if you just look down his filmography, the number of lieutenants and captains and you know all these types of guys.
Yeah, he's a square jawed buzz cut kind of guy. You know what
That's
I mean?
Exactly right. Yeah. And generally speaking, he plays an uncomplicated, often meat-heady cop who, you know, like in Law & Order SVU, he's going to be the guy that just doesn't understand why they have to call SVU to handle rape because it doesn't seem that sensitive to him, right? Like, he's that sort of character an awful lot. And he's such a – there's so much depth to this performance of a guy who really is trying to move the FBI forward – but also is a little older than the main character and has some ingrained things that he can't quite break. But yet he's trying to be open-minded and like he really it's a complicated performance and he's a much sort of more nuanced and I think more interesting character than he often gets to play. And I just think it's an awesome performance.
Yeah, no, I agree. It's certainly it's a meatier role, I think, than you've seen this guy in before, even though he's definitely like a that guy that you
sure you've seen him a million times.
Yeah, you'll notice him. I'm definitely like it's hard for me, you know, if I'm talking to somebody, you know, just in life, like, hey, have you seen Mindhunter?
Right.
It's hard for me at this point where we are to go, you gotta see this show, it's amazing. But like I really like it, and I think we may get to that place, you know, where we feel like that. Like, I'm in, and I want to see more. It's hard for me to go like, oh, yeah, because it hasn't really quite popped like that, but you definitely feel like it's coming.
And yeah, because we've only just gotten to meet Anna Torv, who were you a Fringe guy?
I was not a Fringe guy. I tried with that one, and it just didn't take for me.
I figured that would be a little out there for you. But I loved Fringe, and I love her, and they're really just sort of opening shop. You know, we talked about this with the Deuce last week, and you know, that Wire season where episode 6 is all prologue, and it's like, oh, so we were literally just setting it up for half the season. And I think there's more season to come here, luckily, because it's 3 out of 10, but... You know, it took 3 episodes just to get them set up in their office, basically. So we really are talking about the setup of the story. But I got to say, I would already tell people to watch it because I just think with the setup they've got, with the acting performances they've got, with Fincher at the helm, I have a lot of trust in this.
Yeah, although he's directed, what, 4 episodes of this is from what I'm told, so...
Less, definitely other people. Somewhere around half, I think. But either way, like, it's clearly his baby.
Yeah. And look, you don't need me to tell you David Fincher is awesome. But
no. I was looking at his filmography just the other day talking to somebody about Mindhunters, and it's pretty remarkable.
Yeah, like...
Like, there are just not a lot of people with that level of consistent quality in their directorial careers.
You could do the whole thing, because it's not that long. It's Alien 3, 7... which we talked about. I love The Game. Mm-hmm. Really good. Yep. Underrated. Fight Club.
Really quality film.
Panic Room. Yep. Zodiac. Benjamin Button. The Social Network.
Yeah, Benjamin Button is the one movie that you might say was a blip on the radar. And if that's
I'm very pro Benjamin Button personally. I mean, I think like Benjamin Button was the best picture nominee, if I'm not mistaken.
Well, that's what I was. That was going to be my point. Is like if the blip on your resume is Benjamin Button, that's a hell of a career.
Yeah, and best director, he got a best director nom for that as well.
That's right. And by the way, he also was involved with House of Cards, at least.
Yeah, he didn't. I wasn't quite done there because he got Social Network, Girl with a Dragon Tattoo, Gone Girl, and then now House of Cards and Mindhunter for Netflix. That's pretty strong. And
you did. Here's the best part. You know where he got his start?
Music videos. Yeah, did that's right. Janie's Got a Gun, most famously, I would say, is probably.
Oh man, well that may be most famously, but he did some great Paula Abdul videos.
Oh yeah,
he did Madonna's Vogue video. He did George Michael's Freedom 90. He did a lot of Rick Springfield.
I was gonna say, if you're not on the internet, you'd never guess who the first artist it was. But it's Rick Springfield. The Billy Idol "LA Woman" and "Cradle of Love" videos are great. And like
East classic, "We Don't Have to Take Our Clothes Off" by Jermaine Stewart, who would later pass away from complications with AIDS.
I don't know that I've ever seen that video.
It's hilarious.
I mean, I'm very familiar with the song.
Yeah. By the way, someone just covered that song. I think it was on The Voice in a sort of hilariously slow and serious way.
Oh, really? That sounds amazing.
I quite enjoy it.
He also directed three videos by The Outfield, none of which are Your Love.
That's weird.
Yeah, that is weird. Okay. Let's move on to American Vandal.
Yeah. Now, let me start here. Did you watch Making a Murderer?
Oh,
did we talk about this?
Yeah.
Right, because you tried to get me to watch it, and I wouldn't.
I can't believe we didn't have a Making a Murderer discussion on this podcast. You never watched it, huh?
No, I never watched it. I think we talked about it, and I told you no. It's part of my bad time entertainment ban. I don't need to hear about real murder. I didn't listen to Serial. I didn't watch Making a Murderer. None of that stuff.
So I'm very then. I guess I do have questions for you. I guess I had forgotten that about this whole thing. To me, a central part of this experience is how well they're nailing the beats, particularly of Making a Murderer and Serial. So
see,
not
but that's
having
the thing.
Seen
it's
these,
part of my thing. With Making a Murderer and Serial is like, I get it. I don't care. I get it. I know what you're doing. I've heard enough. I've seen enough to understand. I get it. I get it enough to laugh at it when it's being made fun of. And that's about all I need.
Yeah, all right.
And to me, the hits of American Vandal, which, again, these are two really good Netflix shows, I think. The hits of American Vandal, to me, are playing not only with that design, which I also think was parodied really well in Always Sunny in Philadelphia, but also the incredible jokes of the high school video team, the funny camp joke type stuff, because they're also, although they're doing it clearly in the style of Making a Murderer and Serial, they're also sending up high school tropes in hilarious ways.
All right, I have two thoughts on this. The first is that I'm really having a hard time. My mind's a little blown. I forgot that you hadn't watched Making a Murderer or listened to Serial, and I'm I'm still a little bit I feel bad for you. You know what I mean?
Don't cry for me.
This bad time entertainment thing is dumb, and you should change it. But secondly, I'm a little less a go-go on this show than you are, and I think it's particularly.
See, that's because you know what happened here is it's like the you're like the kids who played too many violent video games and got desensitized to murder. It's like if the murder's not if there's not a real murder, it's not entertaining enough for Derek Madden.
That's
anymore.
Not it at all. It's the it's a
if
little.
If someone
bit
didn't really lose their life. I'm not watching.
It's a little bit in the execution of, is it satire or is it parody, do you think? I guess maybe that's
part
of...
How would you define the difference?
This is part of my question. I feel like parody is just we
silly,
are taking this thing
biting.
And making it silly, whereas satire is more like we are trying to make a point about something through this allegory. if that makes
sense. I would say I am enjoying it more as parody than satire.
I just, and I will say this, like, I laughed more in episodes 3 and 4 than I did in episodes 1 and 2. So, you know, and I do think that you're a little bit more story compelled in the mystery as it goes on, and they sort of start revealing a few things. But I just didn't find it to be that funny.
Like,
if the best thing is like, hey, here's our visual graphic of a camp crime scene with the hand job where there's like really a dick. Like,
that was really pretty incredible.
But that's like the best joke of like the first 2 episodes. You know what I mean? Like if I feel like you need to think that the idea of a kid drawing a penis on a car is funny, or like a real terse examination of like, well, you know, normally he draws dicks with ball hairs versus whether or not he doesn't.
I did think that was funny.
Yeah, like if you think that's really funny, then I guess it works for you. But for me, like it's not unfunny, but I'm not like, you know, oh my God, like this is hysterical.
The scene,
you know,
where the kid who's doing the documentary is talking to the teacher who like really has it out for you know, the main focus of the documentary. And he's trying to find the way to bring up all of the, like, all of the ridiculous discrepancies that his investigation has turned up, like the ball hairs.
Yeah.
And he can't, and like, he's say trying it. To talk to her about like, but what about the ball hairs? But he doesn't like that stuff. That makes me laugh. Maybe it's because I'm childish, but I really get a kick out of that. And by the same token, just some of the, again, the way they poke at some of these high school tropes, I don't know that it has to be satire to be thoughtfully funny, a little more thoughtful than just a penis.
I'll give you an example. It's like, so there's one of the better jokes I thought was like, there was this kind of callback, right, where they were talking about this kid who, you know, may or may not have lied about getting a hand job. And and the one guy is like, you know, has his hands up and he's comparing this kid to other people and he's like saying their names and he's like here. And then this kid, Alex Tamborello, is here, much lower, right?
Right.
And then later on, the sort of the main suspect is talking about this prank that he pulled off. And he's like, you know, my prank, and he does the same thing where he's like, my prank is here, the dick's prank is here. And then he inserts some other pranks in the middle. And like, to me, like, yeah, okay, that's amusing. Like, I kind of smiled, you know what I mean? But I wasn't like, I don't know, like, I just, it's just, like, it's just not that funny to me yet. And like I said, I think there were some more laughs in episodes 3 and 4, and I've heard good things, and I'm a completist, so I'm feeling okay about staying with this show. But, yeah, I'm not in love. Like, I just don't know that, like, I feel like it's an interesting idea, although I'm a little bit wary of, like, Netflix, like, essentially harnessing their own intellectual property. You know what I mean?
It's very ESPN.
Yeah. And I'd like to see, like, I feel like later on the show, like, finally gets a little bit more meta. Like, there's a scene, I want to say it's in episode 4, where the family's talking to a lawyer.
Uh-huh. I haven't gotten to that yet.
And the kid cuts in and says something, and the lawyer's like, who's that? And he's like, I'm making a documentary about this case. And the lawyer goes, I think that's a terrible idea. You know what I'm like?
Right.
And like, all right, so I got that. And like, if it gets a little more meta, I might be in. But I don't know.
But to me, like, so much of what's been great for me so far, and look, let me say clearly, I think Mindhunters has the chance to be one of the better shows we're watching. This is just a funny thing that I'm really enjoying.
But let me put it to you this way, because we were just talking about this, and this is the thing that jumped out at me, is like, you have all these people, and almost Netflix in particular, throwing all these shows at us. So we're at the point where we're like, we can't even really keep track of all the stuff we're trying to watch, and we're all behind on everything.
Yeah, this, like, could wait.
I got to throw 10 episodes of something that's just okay, and I'm not finishing Big Mouth, which I am loving. Right.
Right.
So
no, I agree. But here's what I would say, at least about your, you know, Netflix. What separates Netflix in that respect, at least I think, is that when we're talking about Netflix original series, it's much less Netflix domineered than, say, HBO original series. Not that HBO is a bad place to have a show, but Netflix is, I feel like, when it comes to this original stuff, way more a collection of disassociated artists more or less doing their own thing. You know? That I don't feel like this is really Netflix doing the thing where ESPN has Mike and Mike bring up a topic on the morning show.
Yeah, look, I'm not saying it's the car wash. And I'm not saying it's like, I'm not saying Netflix is necessarily being nefarious. I just mean
I hear what you're saying. We got a lot of
stuff. There's a lot of stuff to watch. And, you know, like, I think it's funny and it might get funnier. You know, like that's still a tough sell, I think, for a lot of people, right?
I think as many of the podcast listeners would know, I'm a guy who is a particular sucker for high school stuff. You know, I like the overdramatic high school soaps oftentimes.
Me too.
I do think part of what has me a little more in on this than you is like, I do think, and maybe they may be chuckles rather than belly laughs, but there's a lot for me. There are a lot of chuckles just about with the fact that this is being shot by the video club. There's just like all these little high school things that I am finding tickling, if not like uproarious. And I think for me, that's why I would make a stronger argument for sticking with it. But again, it's the lesser of the two Netflix shows we watched this week, and I think that's
tickling's a good word for it. Actually, I think that's right about where it's at, where it's kind of like, all right, yeah, okay.
And it doesn't. It's not like Mindhunters, where I feel like I got to be locked in and wide awake, and you know what I mean. Like, it's fun and funny, and if I miss a bit, I'm not. It's not a tragedy. Like, I am tickled by it in a way that I'm enjoying.
That is true. This is the if Mindhunters is HBO, this is definitely a Showtime Netflix show.
Totally. That's a great way of putting it. That is a great way of putting it.
Yeah, for sure. All right. We had one more piece. Well, we had one more piece of armor that we didn't get to, which is Battle of the Sexes.
Yeah.
And that may be
running away from the theaters, which is disappointing.
Yeah, I know. Because it's not like anybody's watching anything else if you look at the box office. So
I know. And I'm excited about this. I read something about it in Sports Illustrated with like a Q&A with Emma Stone and Billie Jean King. Like,
I hear it's quite good. Yeah,
I'm excited to see it. It looks good, so I wish it would stick around. We hope to get to that in the next few weeks, but for now, tabled.
Indeed. But we did listen to the new Beck record, Colors.
Yeah.
I was a little surprised by this record.
Me too.
In a couple of ways. The first is that there were a couple of songs on it that I just thought had been on other Beck records, you know, because they've been singles that have been out for a long time, like Wow. Yeah. And there's another one that I'm escaping that I was like, oh, wait, this is on here too?
Wow feels like it came out 3 years ago.
Yeah, and I actually think Wow is one of the better Beck singles in a long time.
It's the best song on this album, I think.
This is it's a modern record. You know, just reading.
That is the kindest first sentence you could have used to say what you just said.
Let me put it
more harshly quickly and tell me if you disagree.
Okay.
This record, with the possible exception of Wow, and maybe if you have the original, like the single version of Dreams, I guess.
Oh, Dreams, that was the other song that I was not expecting to be on there that I already knew, yeah.
So certainly if you drew a line through those two, probably if you just drew a line through Wow, this is a Beck album that could have been performed entirely by Demi Lovato and Lost Almost Nothing.
All right. I don't know that I 100% agree with that.
To me, this is like it's a pop record. It's just a normal pop record.
Now, I do 100% agree with that.
it's just straight ahead pop music. There's no, where is the Beck I grew up loving?
That is the other part of this that was going to say the other part of the surprise is like, there's no weird Beck on this at all, which is
zero.
Like you would not recognize you know the Beck that made you know, like Wero or Midnight Vultures or One Foot in the Grave. Yeah, like it's like that sort of like loose Beck is gone. But I guess the part where I depart from you is that I don't mind this Beck that much. I thought a lot of this record is successful and fun and that he's kind of good at writing these pop songs.
That's right, but that's my point. That's my point. This could have made a really good Demi Lovato record because they're good pop songs. I don't need Beck to do that.
I just think you resent someone who just wants to write pop songs. You know what I mean?
I resent someone who's capable of more. Yeah. Or again, like, what is okay? So there's a man named Beck Hansen. Agreed.
Yes. Yes.
Arguably, the artist Beck is it, if not a distinct, spiritual individual, at least a particular part of the man that is Beck Hansen. To me, this album is pop songs written by Beck Hansen and then needlessly performed by the artist Beck. Does that make sense?
Like, you think the fact that it's Beck didn't add anything to it necessarily? I guess I could see that.
Yeah, basically. Like the fact that it's Beck, it's just, to me, it's like, he could have written these songs for pop artists and given them to pop artists. And again, I just don't think it would have lost. I don't think many of the songs lose much. There's no album cohesion other than the fact that they are all pop songs.
And that's kind of what I meant by it's a modern record. Like, you know, the kids now don't care about albums. They live in a singles world, and this is a collection of singles.
But does Beck need to sell singles to the kids? Like, what is the? I would like to know his artistic motivations. Yeah,
I think Beck might be. This might be the. I'm trying to remain relevant to the kids.
If that's what he wants to do, then fine. But then yes, I would find that disappointing.
I think that's kind of been Beck's MO the last couple of years. Like, he's dropped a lot of non-album singles that are kind of just sort of fun, up-tempo songs, and I think he does some of that really well. Do you know the song Time Bomb? Came out maybe 10, 15 years ago. It's a non-album track. It was just kind of like this. I think that's one of his most successful songs. Now, that's a little bit weirder, but it's also aggressively kind of fun and up and pop. You know what I mean?
Almost all of Midnight Vultures is aggressively fun and up and pop. I don't have a problem with Beck making bright music. I actually prefer Midnight Vultures is my favorite Beck album.
Yeah.
I love Wero, and most of that stuff is upbeat and rather poppy. But it retains an artistic element of the artist that is Beck, and it was more to me than, say, Scott Storch could have produced.
I guess. So, by the way, Beck worked with this guy Greg Kurstin on this record,
who is
was in the band Geggy Ta. I just did a little deep dive. Do you remember them?
No, I don't.
They had a really awesome '90s like one hit song. About someone who let them change lanes while they were driving.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
I remember the change lanes song.
Totally. And then he wrote Hello apparently and played from Adele and then played on that. And then,
yeah, I was going to say he's a pop producer.
Yeah. Has worked with Foo Fighters and Tegan and Sarah, but also Kelly Clarkson and Ellie Goulding and Sia. So,
yeah. Yeah. And again, that, like, fine, I guess. But if you're asking me, is that what I hope for when I hear a new Beck record is coming out? No, it's not.
Yep. I mean, he's got a writing credit on almost every song on this record, actually.
So that's right.
It's interesting. Yeah.
And so does Beck. I mean, there's no doubt to me that these are Beck songs, that he was in charge of this. Like, they're well-written pop songs. I get it. It's no surprise to me that he can do that. I just don't know why he would want to perform an album of that. I really don't.
I don't know, because it's fun. I would put this record on a party and not feel bad about it at all.
I guess.
All right. Well, I guess we beg to differ on that one.
Well, yeah. No, I mean, I think the interesting thing is I'm not sure we disagree that strongly on the content of the album in terms of, like, is this good music?
Yeah. I think it's just one of those things that's a little bit more about our relative musical viewpoints.
Yeah, yeah, and like, well, and also I think it's also about my, struggles with using tone to convey what I actually mean, because I don't really disagree with anything you've said. it's a good pop record. He has a that's perfectly, if that's what he wants to do, and appealing to kids is part of his MO at this point, or over the last several years, and that's part of the goal, fine, cool, that's, you can do that, that's a thing you're allowed to do, and you did a good job. It's just not,
I mean,
I'm not excited to spin this record again. I don't feel like I'm going to go back to this and discover things I love that I didn't notice.
I don't think he's completely lost back, and I don't know that Demi Lovato is going to do a song that has those kind of like disco violins, like Up All Night sort of has, you know what I mean?
I mean, I chose her because she, because I didn't want to debase him by saying like Britney Spears.
No, I just meant in the same way you did, as generic pop singer.
Right.
Because I honestly know nothing about the particulars of Demi Lovato's music. So
did
she do Side to Side? No, right? She didn't.
Yeah. I have no idea.
You could put Ariana Grande and Demi Lovato and Selena Gomez like in a room and just like, and try to make me guess which song was whose, and I would have a really, really hard time.
So all brunettes look the same to you, is what you're saying, and sound the same.
Are they all brunettes?
So. Who was the first one you said? Definitely Selena Gomez and Demi Lovato are.
And Ariana Grande. I think she's a brunette, right?
Yeah, she's a brunette.
Okay, damn it.
Donut licking brunette.
Oh, she's right. She licked the donut. Okay.
Yeah.
I'm
she's
old.
The little one who's on Saturday Night Live a lot. That's Ariana Grande.
All right.
She's teeny tiny.
I think they're all teeny tiny, aren't they? Which one has lupus?
Which one has which?
Which one has lupus?
Oof. Now you're pushing into trivia. I do not know. Right. You're the radio DJ, for God's sake. I'm just sitting at home.
I think that is Selena Gomez. All right. I need to feel more like a man. Let's talk about sports.
Good luck, buddy. Good luck. Which sport you want to start with, I guess, is the question.
Well, the World Series is tonight. Should we start there?
Okay. Do you care? Are you going to watch?
Yeah, I'm going to watch, I think.
Okay.
I am I've been entertained by the playoffs. Uh-huh.
I would actually say, you know, this is not good for baseball, but it is good for the consumer, that baseball is rapidly entering the hockey territory, where almost nobody except diehards for specific teams watch the majority of the regular season. But it has that same effect of hockey, where in the postseason, unless there's like a dumb blowout, there's a lot of tension, man. It's an exciting experience. It can keep you on the edge of your seat, and I would say a fair number of really good baseball games in this postseason.
I would agree. Yeah, there've been some excellent baseball games, and some you know, like, yeah, it's the baseball you're seeing has also been at a really high level. By the way, speaking of tension and just making sure that we release some tension.
Oh, boy.
Selena Gomez does have lupus. That was
good. Okay. Yeah. I'm glad you confirmed.
Diagnosed in 2015.
I hope she's got it under control and, you know, managing it well. I know lupus can be tough.
She actually got a kidney transplant earlier this year. Yeah, for the lupus. So there you go.
I know that.
Yeah, thank you, Wikipedia.
So she may or may not have had a liver transplant or a kidney transplant, is what you're saying.
I think I'm pretty sure that actually happened. That was sort of in the news. anyway, I've been enjoying the baseball, and I've also really been enjoying. And it's funny because I feel like I see a lot of the ex players and old timey. You know, I mean, he's a lifelong hero of mine, but the John Smoltzes of the world.
Mm-hmm.
I think they all really hate the aggressive bullpen usage by the managers in the playoffs, and I'm loving it that people are trying to find ways to innovate this game, and I think it's made it from a strategy standpoint significantly more interesting. I think even also from a sort of personality standpoint, you know what I mean? Like the specter of Justin Verlander or Clayton Kershaw coming out of the bullpen to work innings on short rest is going to be later in this series is going to be tremendous. You know what I mean?
And it'll be a great story whether it works or not.
Yeah, agreed. And there are some like legitimately fun players in this series. Like,
no question. Jose Altuve is he's probably the most exciting player to be one of the best in the league since what? Like Ricky Henderson or something like that.
Yeah, and Springer and Correa are, I think, are really fun, and then Justin Turner is a really fun dude to watch, and Bellinger, yeah, and Seager's coming back for this series for the Dodgers. So,
and just a lot of young talent on both sides. Yeah. I mean, it's a young World Series. One of the in terms of the guys who are the main stars, one of the youngest I can remember. Although, you know, Verlander, of course, is the ultimate veteran for the Astros.
Yeah, and very evenly matched too, I think. You know,
yeah,
the Dodgers are probably a slight favorite, right? But look, it's baseball.
I'm not even sure. I have not looked at the gambling odds, but
whoever wins the series, it's not going to be a surprise. I don't think. You know, it's baseball. Whoever's playing better for the next week and a half is going to win the series. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and you know, you're right. It's pretty even. The Dodgers have. If they had a real edge, it would be depth of starting pitching, but that's not a huge issue in a World Series. So, you know, because we're talking about depth after the top three or four. So I mean, I'm excited. You got teams that have exciting young players. Both teams have three or four pitchers capable of turning in a gem at any given moment. It's just. It has everything you want out of a World Series, with the possible exception of anyone that a layperson has ever heard of.
Yeah, that's true. But
I mean, that's the thing with baseball. But look, this is what happens in hockey every year, and people still watch the Stanley Cup Finals and the playoffs in general because it's exciting TV. And so the key for baseball here is, you know, there's only three or four household names in your sport at this point. All right, and two of them are broadcasters. So,
yeah.
No matter who's in the World Series, if it's not the Yankees and the Red Sox, which, by the way, for the uninitiated, not a conceivable World Series, you're going to have to be selling lay people on names they've never heard of. The good news here is these guys can actually do things that will be exciting.
Yeah, no, I would agree with that. I mean, I think it's by the way, the Dodgers are -165 favorite.
Okay. That's actually more than I would have thought.
Yeah, a little more than I would have thought too. The one thing about, and this is, look, obviously it's accentuated in playoff baseball, but it is the one thing that jumps out at me, like, not having watched a ton of baseball this year for the first time in many years.
How bad the replay review situation is?
That's bad, and there's so much time between pitches.
Oh, it's impossible. They've got to do something, and I know it's like tired, and there's, but they have to do something radical to speed up the game.
Yeah, no,
it's not these half measures saving, you know, half a second here, second and a half there. It's not enough.
They need a clock, and they need to actually enforce the clock.
I mean, that would be a start.
And they're gonna have to limit the amount you can step out.
Yeah, they're gonna have to limit both the pitcher and the batter in terms of wasted time. And honestly, yeah, there's just that. I would not. I think there's almost zero chance of it happening.
Me too, because the players' union is really powerful in baseball, and players hate change that affects them in any appreciable way.
Yeah, and it's a real shame because you're only hurting yourself, or at least, you know, the next generation of players who are going to play in a league that's much less watched.
Yeah, I agree. I agree, but they don't have to worry about that because they're all rich.
That's true. They are all very, very rich.
All right. Speaking of leagues where people are less rich, the NFL season.
You specifically said before the podcast that you wanted to have an NFL discussion exclusively about things on the field, and then you open with that.
You're right. That. Well, I mean, that's all right. Fine.
You're definitely like pushing it. You're like teasing me. You're like, yeah. No, just on the field. But boy, they are underpaid for what they do on the field.
Yeah, you're right. it's impossible, right? It's impossible to think about the NFL without thinking about how horrible it is for the human beings involved, and maybe for all of us as well.
Yeah, that's true. But let's focus on the fact that actually most of the football right now is horrible.
Yeah. I mean, how strange is it that we are just about the halfway point? Like, a lot of teams have played, you know, 6-7 games now, right? Everybody's played 6 or 7 games now.
Yep. We're more than a third of a way through an NFL season.
No one has any idea who's any good.
Nope.
Like, I mean,
who's the best team in the NFL? I'm asking you.
Oh, man. I'm going to say... off the top of my head, I think it's the Eagles, and I feel really... I'm not sure I believe in the Eagles.
I think it's the Eagles. I mean, your other candidates? Here, I'll give you the division leaders. Okay? The New Orleans Saints. Not that good. The Minnesota Vikings. No quarterback, no running back. The St. Louis Rams. I mean, how many games did they win last year? Two? Three? You mentioned the Eagles. The Eagles have a 2.5 game lead on the Cowboys.
Yeah.
They're running away with that division. Then you got the Patriots, who have just a half game lead on the Bills and Dolphins. The Dolphins are within a half game of the Patriots. Think about that. You have the Chiefs, who just lost, and in fact have lost 2 in a row after starting 5-0. You have the Steelers, who are 5-2 somehow, but are wildly underperforming on offense. And you've got the Titans and Jaguars tied for the AFC South. Honestly, it's hard to even argue that there are three good teams, less any great teams.
The Football Outsiders playoff odds today apparently have a 54% of both the Rams and Jacksonville making the playoffs. And I don't mean each of them. I mean both of them.
And by the way, I happen to have watched more than any reasonable person should of each of those teams, because the Jaguars defense has been the best player on most of my fantasy teams. And the Rams are, you know, on the West Coast and therefore on
TV. And like kind of fun. It's really
and
weird.
And kind of fun. I was going to say, having watched those two teams, they're two of the more entertaining teams to watch.
Yeah.
The Jaguars are basically inventing their own brand of football, which is without a quarterback. In the age of the quarterback, they literally have said, our defense is great. We have two really good running backs. We're not going to make the quarterback do anything ever.
Hey, your Bears are trying that strategy too.
Hey, it's working in both cases. So, on one hand, that's exciting. Weird stuff is happening. Teams you didn't think could compete are. And in fact, not just competing, but I have heard more than one analyst, not talking about playoff odds or anything like that, just say the Rams are the best team in the NFC West.
Let me give you your football
Think about that.
Football
the Rams
outsiders.
Are the best team in the NFC West.
Here's your DVOA top five, if you were statistically inclined. DVOA being sort of the advanced stat catch-all rating, the war for football teams, if you will.
Yeah, how good are you?
Number one is Kansas City. This is week six, so it doesn't have the most recent games taken into account. Number one is Kansas City. Two, Philadelphia. Mm-hmm. Three.
And I would imagine those would flip after this week.
Yeah, probably. Three, Pittsburgh.
Mm-hmm.
Four, the Rams.
Yeah.
Five, the Texans.
Yeah, I mean, so there you have it.
Yeah.
Just start with Pittsburgh is number three. They lost to the Bears with Mike Glennon.
Yeah, sure did. Sure did.
You know, they have
almost lost to the Browns too, if I'm not mistaken.
That's right. Yeah. They've looked not themselves.
Yeah, literally half of the narrative quarterback is saying, "I don't know if I still have it in public after games."
Exactly. And by the way, analysts were saying that before he volunteered it.
Third best team in the league. Yeah.
Yeah. It is on one hand exciting because you never know what's going to happen any given Sunday, blah, blah, blah. Your team, if you're not the 49ers, probably still has a chance. But on the other hand, week to week, there's just no telling what to expect. And that can be a bad thing in terms of quality. And that's it, quality. That's what it comes back to, is how exciting is it for your mediocre team to have a chance if all they have a chance to do is bore you with more mediocre football?
I mean, all right, so look, I root for a team that is 3-3 and honestly has looked less than mediocre. They won the first three games and lost their last three. They've looked less than mediocre the last three.
Yeah, they, and by the way, like, the we're talking about the Super Bowl losing Atlanta Falcons.
Runners up. I prefer runners up, Atlanta Falcons.
I think in most cases I would oblige. In this case, not so much.
All right. Go to hell. anyway, the knowing that my team has the virtually the same, and in fact, I would even argue improved talent over last year's team. Yeah. I feel like, yes, the fact that the rest of the league isn't running away and hiding is a very good thing, because maybe if we get our shit together, which I think is still possible in, over the next 10 games, then we're going to be in a good position. And I would think if you were a fan of, say, Seattle, you would feel the same way. I would think if you're a fan of the Packers and you're thinking, well, Aaron Rodgers might be back the end of the season, if we can just sort of hang around for the playoffs, we can make a
run.
Essentially,
if you feel like your team has underperformed or may underperform over the next few weeks, like, it's not the worst thing in the world.
Yeah, New England's got to be feeling the same way, with maybe a little less Michigas, you know what I mean, because their record's fine and their division's
The question I'm asking is bigger than that, though. It is because that's true.
Dallas,
and generally,
too?
What's that?
I think you're Dallas, you probably feel that way, too, right? Like, hey, if we can just get it together,
the Raiders. The Raiders feel that way.
Mm-hmm.
There's lots of teams that feel that way, and yes, fundamentally that's a good thing. But I do think, you know, there's like fandom of your team, and then there's the sport at large. And what has stood out for the NFL over the past 20 years is that the sport at large has dominated the sports landscape, has been by far the most watched and consumed and discussed sport in America, and all of that sort of stuff. And I do think, you know, and actually I'm going to write about this for the Examiner this week a little bit, that the fact that the quality of the entertainment, because it's one thing that any team has a chance, it's another to watch these games beset by penalties, short on first downs, some bad football, to be perfectly frank. That's a different thing. And I do wonder, if we assume there's a finite amount of football talent in the world, or at least available to the league, that is it not actually better to have four or five dominant teams and four or five truly abjectly awful teams than to really aim for, you know, 30-team parity?
Well, look, I don't think they're aiming for 30-team parity. We don't have 30-team parity. It's, you know, this is another place where DVOA is useful. Like, the gap between Team 24 and Team 25 is, like, greater than the gap between, like, the next 20-something teams. Like, there's a real cliff of terribleness at the end. And just no greatness at the top, which is sort of that, like, that's the part that's different. You know what I mean?
Right. So, but either way, so if it's 26-team parity, if 26-team, like, wouldn't it be better for the middle to be lower so that the top could be higher, or the bottom to be bigger?
Sure, you know, but you can't exactly engineer that every year. And this is a year where an inordinate number – I mean, look, there's always going to be some star players who have hurt, but there have been some major, major dudes taken off the, board this year.
I feel like injuries and penalties are the two worst things for the NFL in terms of watching a game. In terms of entertainment, injuries and penalties hurt the game the most.
Yeah.
And I feel like both of those are at an all-time high.
So – I think the league is, it's a weird season, you know, and every once in a while you're going to have a 2001, was it, where the Rams beat the Titans in the Super Bowl, and you're like, did that really happen? Oh, I guess it did. You know, but, like, I don't know that that harbors anything. I think we've taken a few things, like last year's ratings drop, which I think we could sort of see was at least a lot election related. Uh-huh. And, you know, this year's low quality of play. And I think we all want to harbinger what this means for the world at large. And I think that they may be more random and isolated than we realize. And look, there are some long-term trends that definitely work against you know, football for sure.
Yeah, last year's ratings don't mean a lot to me.
But the
declining quality, I mean, it's like you said, it means as much as its permanence. Like, is it a decline in quality or is it a bad year? We won't know for 5 or 10 years. And I'm not necessarily claiming it's one or the other. I'm wondering for the first time, like, even last year, even with concussions and domestic abuse cases and all the problems football has had, it's only very recently that I have started to feel as though there's at least a chance a real decline is coming. You know, I like all that others, all that stuff has been pretty far down the road to me.
Yeah. I don't know.
But I tell you what, if the football's not as entertaining, it's going to slow you down. Maybe. You're going to turn off the game that much sooner.
See, this is this that one is also,
more, you know, five more kids are going to play basketball instead.
This is like, you know, this, I feel like it's a little bit of an anti-college football perspective, right? Because people, you know, if you're still over there really enjoying, you know, lower quality football and finding it really entertaining, then maybe I think you're less worried about this, I feel like. So
that may be true. That may sort of color our perspectives. Is like, yeah. I don't really enjoy bad football.
Yeah.
I find it frustrating to watch. And look, I mean, there's just a lot of factors that lead to bad football, you know? Yeah.
College football is still really fun to me.
Fine, but my point is, with the NFL, like, coaching is not evaluated properly. Players are not evaluated properly. We don't know how to scout the most important position in the game and project it forward at all.
Yeah, but I mean, look, that's, you know, the NBA misses on guys all the time. You know what I mean?
Sure.
Like, it's really hard. It's really hard to project athleticism forward. And I would say basketball is the easiest sport in which to do it. Think about baseball. Think about how often, like, first rounders in baseball turn out to be not good.
Yeah, that's true. I think baseball's a tough comparison. Basketball is the better comparison, and I would say that the difference would be there's just no position like the position of quarterback.
But I mean, here's why I think baseball is a better comparison, because basketball,
because of the more rounds.
Because there's more guys on the field. Like, when you watch someone play in a basketball game,
quarterback is not,
like, you can see someone dominate. You know what I mean? You can see someone dominate a basketball game, and it's, I think it's a little easier to project what their impact might be taken outside of that context. Whereas football is so dependent on the other people around you.
Oh, well, yeah. Well, you're talking about in terms of the difficulty of scouting.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, no, well, that's true, but I'm not, like, reasons be damned, you know? Like, I hear you, you're right, it's a hard job. Fine, there are reasons it's difficult, I'm not disputing that, but it doesn't change the fact that it leads to just years of regression on the parts of franchises on a regular basis. The fact that no one can evaluate this position properly.
Yeah, I mean, yes. And look at Deshaun Watson, right? Deshaun Watson was a fantastic, incredibly exciting college quarterback. And when he came out, like, there were some people who thought, this guy is a top five first round, no doubt about it, stud.
Right.
You know, his coach famously said, if you're passing on him, you're passing on Michael Jordan.
Slight exaggeration.
Well, it might have been, maybe. You know, he just won his first national championship with the guy, so I understand his perspective. Then there were other people who thought he didn't know how to make a read and he wasn't any good. A lot of people. Like, that was a very common perception about him coming into this season. Other quarterbacks were taken ahead of him. Now, it looks like he's pretty good, but we're 6 games in and nobody really knows, right? So,
yeah. Yeah, no, nobody really knows. And it's not so much that NFL scouts are doing a bad job. I'm not saying, like, oh, see, the NBA does this better. I'm saying the simple fact that it's so difficult and hit or miss to scout a position that has such outlandish impact on winning and losing is a huge factor in just the quality of the sport overall. It's a huge factor. So is the failure to evaluate coaching.
Yeah.
I mean, the fact of the matter is, I don't think most franchises have a solid method for evaluating a head coach. I don't. So much is based on wins and losses,
right?
And that is so often not a representation of how good the coach is actually doing,
right? Because look, so many of these NFL games are on a fulcrum in which one or two plays ultimately swing the outcome of a game.
Exactly.
And we evaluate everything, including quarterbacks, a lot of wins and losses.
That's a big problem.
Incredible folly. Because not only does one or two plays change a game, there's so many people contributing to the outcome of a football game.
Yeah, some of them are not even in uniform. There are referees yeah. who make huge contributions.
Like, it's really, yeah, I agree. You know,
that's how you end up with teams like the Oakland Raiders, who are probably married to a guy in Jack Del Rio who, God love him, I don't think is a particularly good head football coach.
Yeah, here's the other thing about that, though, and I think this is particularly true when we evaluate coaches and baseball managers too. The teams have so much more access to information that we don't have, and mainly meaning like, what is this guy like the other 160 hours of the week that we don't see him out on a football field?
Well, right, and I think that's where Jack Del Rio undoubtedly is great, because his players love him. He's a former player. I don't think
that stuff really matters. Like, I really
do. Here's the thing. I'm not saying that doesn't matter. What I am saying is, in terms of what happens on the field between the lines, the Raiders make a lot of pretty apparent coaching and or strategy mistakes.
Yeah.
And there are tons of teams like that. I mean, you know, and some of it, look, some of it is a balancing act, right? Because Andy Reid's going to fuck up the clock. You know, Andy Reid, wherever he is the head coach, at some point, he's going to fuck up a clock situation.
Yeah. Look, I'm going to say something.
He's also going to make
your
quarterback play at an elite level. He's going to do, you know, like, so sometimes it's you're weighing one thing against the other.
Bill Belichick teams make strategic mistakes. It happens.
That's
you know,
fair. They made a big one in a Super Bowl that did not come back to bite them.
Yeah, you know.
You're right. So happens. Maybe I'm being overly harsh, but I do, and maybe it's just that the job is incredibly difficult. So maybe what I'm really saying is, NFL head coaches have to delegate better. Mm. There are mistakes that can be made from a strategy perspective where you say, "I took a shot, it didn't work. We live to fight another day." But then there are things that should never happen. There are bad challenges that should never be tossed. There are just things that should be solvable by putting in effective processes in your franchise that NFL teams failed on a regular basis. Yeah. And to think the amount of money at stake that they wouldn't make these, you know, a lot of these things are a matter of paying an assistant coach an extra $100,000 a year just to sit in front of a TV and do a very simple job.
I think my point is that nobody knows anything, including us, about who's any good. That's you know,
there's no question about that.
We're all feeling our way through the dark.
And if nothing else, there is certainly like a tinge of excitement to that, right?
A little bit. Like there is a little bit of fun to like, I have no idea what's going to happen this week.
Like, the Bears are an abject disaster. They got, like, 3 first downs last week, but they won. And with Aaron Rodgers down for a while, like, who knows? Even I can talk myself into the Bears competing for the playoffs, which gives you an indication of just how wide open everything is.
Yeah, yeah, that's pretty – I feel like that's a note of insanity we can end it on.
Yeah, that may be – I mean – my sanity spinning out of control is one of the core themes of this podcast, which, by the way, we are mere weeks away from our 100th episode.
Wow. All right, we'll have to throw a big party.
Invite all our past guests back. I did see Kareth.
I was going to say strippers,
work,
but okay.
Will again this week. So, you know, like if you're saying you want to revisit my Rolodex for like a 5 minutes with all our former guests for 100th episode and like pretend like it's a thing, I'll see what I can do.
Yeah, we'll do the best of. That'd be great. All right. So homework real quick. We mentioned I'm going to force myself to watch Stranger Things.
Yep. You're also going to force yourself to watch another thing on Netflix, which is the Meyerowitz stories, the Noah Baumbach film starring Ben Stiller, Dustin Hoffman, and Adam Sandler.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that because I like Noah Baumbach, and I've actually heard this is like the really good Sandler that, you know, comes out once every like 10, 15 years. So,
and I've heard that Ben Stiller and Dustin Hoffman are also quite good.
So yeah, so I'll be looking forward to checking that out, and then I think that's it for right now. Although I feel like there's a television show that we should be watching that we're
Well, The Walking Dead came back this past week, and so I think we will likely visit that next week, and then just. We got to catch up, man. I got to catch up on The Deuce, Better Things, You're the Worst. Like, I really dug myself a hole celebrating my friend's nuptials this past weekend. I got work to do. The good news is I got time.
Well, I'm going to a bunch of shows this week, so I got a few more things.
Oh, poor baby. I'm going to the Warriors game, so there.
All right. Well, I might go to a T-Wolves game. How about that?
Oh, yeah. Well, I'm going to – I got – Yeah, no, that's it. I have nothing else in my life.
All right, say goodbye.
Bye.
This game's in the Admiral refrigerator. The door is closed. The light's out. Butter's getting hard. The eggs are cooling, and the Jell-O is jiggling.
So long, everybody.
And do me a favor. Have yourself a tremendous evening.